It was General Assembly 1988, a late June desert morning in Palm Springs, California. My hotel room phone rang. I held my breath as I picked up the receiver. Sure enough, it was Tira Stubbs calling for the Boise Unitarian Universalist Fellowship's Ministerial Search Committee. She said, "How would you like to come up to Boise for a week next month?" Fleshed out, that sentence meant, "We, the search committee, have chosen you as the candidate for our pulpit. We are inviting you to spend a week candidating with the congregation, spend a week in mutual discernment, at the end of which the congregation will vote to see if they agree with us that you should be our minister." I was overcome with joy, for I wanted very badly to serve this congregation as its minister and had been feeling a strange call in this direction for months. I'd never been here. Also, I knew that 95% or more of the ministers chosen by a search committee as the candidate are called as the minister, and the chances were good that I would be called. And so I was. On July 22, 1988, by a vote of something like 97%, I headed back to California to tie up very quickly my seminary and church life there. On August 28, accompanied by my dear sister Jenny, I drove into the Treasure Valley, thick and overcast that year with smoke from forest fires. I went to work almost immediately. About 2 days after my arrival, Church Patriarch John Harms told me that Rosalie Sorrells was in intensive care at St. Alphonsus Hospital, that she was very important to this church and to the world, and that I needed to go visit her. So, of course, I did. And that was my first hospital visit as a called minister. I had officially begun a new life. The change was made, signed, sealed, and delivered. I had a pulpit, and this church had a new minister. Everyone could take a deep breath and relax, right? Well, as many of you know, it was not so simple. There were so many things I didn't know about serving a congregation. Seminary gives you only the vaguest notion of what it's going to be like, and I stumbled many times. I learned from a colleague a phrase that, lo, these many years has guided me, which is, ministry is always having to say you're sorry. The vast majority of people were open-hearted and welcoming, while at the same time, they were grieving their former minister, forgiving me my trespasses, and getting used to a totally new style of ministry. A few people hated my style, my theology, my whatever. There were only two committees in the whole church, Sunday service and a very small children's religious education. So I had no idea where to go if I received requests about membership, finance, social action decisions, classes people wanted to teach, etc. We had fun with things like our spring Shakespeare class, and I started to make friends and know some mutual trust. I was also incredibly lonely the first year, sometimes almost in tears on Sunday afternoons. Getting to be good friends with Bob Wallace after a few months helped that a lot. For those of you who don't know, I'm married to Bob Wallace. There was a deeply unfortunate rift between me and the director of religious education, which just got worse and worse until she resigned in 1992. The change happened One day in August 1988. The transition took us about 4 years. William Bridges is a well-known author on change, and he opens one of his books with a sentence, "It isn't the changes that do you in, it's the transitions." He writes and speaks at length about the importance of paying attention to transition, to the complex emotional processes that always accompany change, no matter how wonderful the change is. He says, "Psychological transition depends on letting go of the old reality and the old identity you had before the change took place." How many things we have to let go when we are building through a transition into a genuinely new place. Think about one of the changes in your life, small or large. Changing schools, moving, breaking up with a partner or mate, getting a new job or losing one, recovering from an addiction, losing a loved one, bringing a dog or a cat or a horse into your life, getting or losing a driver's license, creating new relationships. Take a moment to pinpoint the change itself, like that day I arrived. Reflect on the process that led you to the place where you were comfortable in your new skin, the altered skin resulting from the change. Maybe you consciously worked on facing the losses and the newness of transition, or maybe it just happened. How long did it take? What ended? What did you have to take into yourself to make yours? This congregation will, in the not too distant future, undergo a major change. I plan to retire from the Unitarian Universalist ministry in June 2013. That is to say, I plan to be your minister for a little more than 3.5 more years, and then I will not be your minister. New ministers will arrive. New ministry will arrive. The change has not happened, but it will. My vision is a sort of pre-transition transition, a time in which we all joyfully enter into the chaos and creativity that accompanies deep change. This congregation as an institution, you and I, have a long, very real relationship. There are families I have served by marrying, welcoming children into the world, and burying members. The parents of several of our adolescents were married by me. When my sister died, you all held me in my sorrow for a long time until I came back from that awful grief. In 1998, we left behind a beloved and too small old building and created a new, beautiful home. Your minister got married in 1991 in the Congregational Church because at that time there wasn't enough room in our fellowship to contain the celebration. 30-plus year veterans of this church have worked hard with relatively new folks, shaping, embracing worship, welcoming newcomers, joyfully calling us to justice. People have been simply dreadful to each other. And reconciliation has sometimes happened. We have loved each other with an intensity that has rocked us. We have laughed and danced and teased and held each other. Lovers, gay and straight, have met and joined. Soul-weary people have found refuge, and seekers have arrived in wide-eyed amazement. Personal and institutional despair has overcome individuals and the church at different times, and we have found ways together to bring faith and love back into our hearts. Throughout all this, I have sought ever and always, and oh so imperfectly, to honor a sentence I learned in a song from my seminary days. The highest form of greatness is the wisdom and the generosity to multiply the effectiveness of others. Because of this intense, authentic, long-standing relationship, and honoring all of you newcomers who may be choosing to step into this stream, bringing your fully human selves into it also, because of this, I want to honor our life together by ending it creatively, generously, and intentionally. I want to leave knowing that this fellowship is even better than it has been, that it is genuinely welcoming so that all who enter our doors are embraced. It is financially viable, able to leap into wonderful projects because we have gone to the considerable sacrifice of paying off the mortgages that have resulted from visionary property buying. Above all, spiritually vital, filled with members and friends who are called to reverence, to right relationship and social action, who ache to nurture souls and help heal the world. I want the Boise Unitarian Universalist Fellowship to shine with the light of an unnameable God so that wonderful ministers will be pounding down the doors, clamoring to be called to this fabulous church. Here's the catch. We can overcome it, though. It's going to be all right. A lot of people don't think it can be done, this moving intentionally over several years toward an ending change. Some of my colleagues are aghast that I am transgressing the conventional wisdom of allowing no more than a few months for goodbye and transition creating. One of my friends said, they'll treat you like a lame duck. Another said, you tell them you're retiring, and then first thing you know, there's that meeting you're not invited to. Yeah, my response to her was, oh, no, please, not invite me to a meeting. Oh, no, how would that work? Throw me in that briar patch. I have a couple of responses to the lame duck concern. One is an echo of what our friend, UU Minister Margaret Kipe, said to me. She said, the concern about lame duck treatment is based on relationships where power is the most important thing. You folks have more authentic relationships than that. I hope so. And my second response is this. I have tons of vigor, energy, and vision, and I can't imagine anyone lame ducking me for at least a couple of years. I intend to be something of a pain, pushing hard for spiritual integrity, financial and institutional health, a justice orientation, and more commitment out of the 50% of our folks who are simple consumers at this point and who volunteer nothing of their time and talent. During the last year and a half or so, it will probably be healthy for me to stroll to downstage left, allowing other influences to move to center. I don't think I'm going to care if I'm a lame duck at that point. I don't know if this will work. We will have a transition team working as creatively as possible to deal with the undoubted issues that will arise as we all contemplate the ending of our relationship. Some of us will detach, or at least feel like detaching. Some of us will develop major dependencies, or at least feel dependent and scared. Some will realize that Elizabeth Green's not that good a minister anyhow, and maybe we should talk about those phone calls that she didn't return and those appointments she missed, and it's high time she left, so why doesn't she get on with it? That will happen. And a lot of us will walk together through our grief and our hopes, holding up the shining vision of this church, which is far, far greater and more important than any ministers, no matter how long they stay. If it turns out that my colleagues and other learned experts are right, if this path fatally compromises our ministry together, I will simply retire before June 2013. I don't think that's going to have to happen, though. I think it's going to be all right. I believe we have the wisdom to live together consciously and honestly in these last years of our relationship. I believe we have the vision to keep creating, holding before us the flame of humanity's finest potential. I believe we have the generosity and the courage to love each other authentically in grief and hope and faith and laughter. Hush, hush, somebody's calling our name. Oh, my Lord, oh, my Lord, what shall we do? We don't really know. But we do know we can live together well if we are rigorously honest with ourselves and each other. We know that if every one of us, atheist and God lover alike, has a spiritual practice, we will be guided in the paths of compassion, genuine righteousness, and reconciliation. We know we can build a shining place of hope if we rise above our pettier selves. We know we can honor this long ministry together if we pay attention to depth of soul. We know that we will not go astray if we love each other in all the ways that stern taskmaster requires of us. Let us go forth into this new territory, guided by good sense, laughter, loving intention, and the wonder of our bonds and our time together.